We're continuing now with the Haggadah. We were in the part of Arami Ovidavi. And we were tracing these various steps in the process. That's why you can't just tell the story. As we mentioned, you're supposed to tell the story in your own words, but you can't just tell the story in your own words without access to Torah. It's an impossibility because we don't know. Other than the general, we don't know the particularities, the psychological element, the attempt to break them, but to break their spirit. This is revealed to us through the Torah. We differentiated between the Inui and between the Avodah Kasha. That's where we left off. The Inui was more of a humiliation, I would say, an affliction, in that they singled out the Jews for a specific type of excess tax to build the cities. So that was their burdens. The Jews had to bear the burdens. Of course, it's a physical phenomenon, but it's also mainly seems to be a psychological one, because it doesn't talk about back-breaking labors. Then the Avodah Kasha, which is Farech. And that seems to me much, much harsher. That's a real enslavement. That breaks the person's spirit. Then the person becomes a slave. The Misim, the first one, is Mas, is tax. That's a burden. That's why it mentions Sivlosim. That's a burden. But it doesn't make you into a slave. The Avodah Kasha, the heavy labor, was a real enslavement. And that is much more dangerous. That really destroys a person. The enslavement destroys a person. Let's put it this way. A slave is not... it's not a fully functioning human being. It's a form of death, I would say. It's similar to the idea, although, I mean, I'm making the connection. I haven't seen it stated that way. For example, it says that an ani is chashiv kemes, that a poor person, by poor it means really poor. It doesn't mean someone that's low income. It means a real poor person that's dependent upon others and has to go begging is equivalent to a dead person. Now, that's not to be taken literally, and the person, we're not saying he has no value, because we're not measuring a person's value by his money. That's not what it means. It means that this is a serious impediment to his ability to live life. I don't mean just practically speaking, because you could have someone who's an ani, and he could be in a place where people give him tzedakah. The mere fact that he's dependent on others, and that he doesn't have any kind of economic independence, generally speaking, although this too doesn't, you know, it doesn't have to. It depends, it's a psychological phenomenon. If a person can accept the reality, he's completely dependent, and he gets what he needs, and he spends the rest of the day learning Torah, and even teaching Torah, or whatever, so then there's nothing that says it can't, but generally speaking, it's not going to happen, because man has to operate from a certain state of psychological strength. In order to achieve anything, he has to have psychological strength and confidence in himself, which stems from a certain sense of dignity about himself. And that's a big issue in life. It's probably the biggest impediment to happiness. It's also the biggest impediment to success, which is pretty much simultaneous with happiness. That the person, there are many people that are very skilled at different things, but they can't achieve what they have the ability to do because they're lacking that psychological strength. And thus they're very insecure and they're afraid. Of course, the question is, what are they afraid of? Whatever they're afraid of, it's probably in their own minds, much, much more than in reality. Most of the failure that we're, it's failure, that's what people are afraid of, the fear of failure, due to the fact that a person doesn't have self-confidence, doesn't thinks he deserves it, and things of that sort. And it's all in the mind, because what's let's say you fail, you try and you fail, but it's to you it's a failure. To the other person doesn't really care. We project, We give things a certain reality. We project significance, and we become embarrassed or ashamed. But it's all in your own mind. I'm not saying that there are no occasions where a person can do things that embarrass them. That's a reality, but that should be a fleeting thing, and you move on. But that's the idea. That's the idea of a slave. A slave is not, in that sense, a full-fledged human being. In terms of his own sense of self, you're not going to have a group of slaves that are going to achieve anything other than labor, where they carry out orders. But to be independent and to initiate and to build, which depends upon a certain willingness to make a decision, which is connected to a certain confidence about oneself, so that's the exact opposite of a slave. A slave is someone whose spirit has been beaten from him. That's the second phase here, avodah kasha. The avodah kasha is what renders them into slaves, physically and psychologically. That's why we see that when Moshe came to the Jews, at first they listened, then when there was a setback, as soon as there was a setback, they refused to listen. Because of avodah kasha, it says, the heavy labor, and kotzer ruach. Their spirit was very, very limited, very limited. Now you can begin to appreciate what the purpose of all this is. Because it's praising Hashem. The ultimate goal is to praise Hashem for all the miracles. But in order to do that, you have to be aware of that's part of the idea of maskil b'gnus. That is, we begin with degradation. So a person has to appreciate what took place and the state that the Jews were in order for him to appreciate the miracle that Hashem wrought. That's the end of that phase. That's the description of the severe state in which the Jews were in. I think also when you read this, you get the sense that they were in a situation from which they couldn't extricate themselves. They could not extricate themselves from the situation. Because, quite aside from the idea that the will of God, well, that's something one has to... we read it in Haggadah, that at the very beginning, that had God not taken our forefathers out of Egypt, then we and our children and children's children would have been slaves to Pharaoh, and therefore it's incumbent upon us to give praise and to tell the story, and even if we're all wise, kulanu chachamim, we have to engage in the story. What's the reason behind that? Why is it that had God not taken our forefathers out of Egypt, then we would still be slaves? That question is asked, you know, very, very frequently. Now, in the past, we've stated the reason for that is because it would have been that the question was that a few thousand years later, wouldn't there have been change? And why couldn't the Jews have extricated themselves? So the answer that we've always given is because of divine providence. That whatever happens to the Jews is divine providence. And had God not taken us out, then we still would have been in that condition. We could ask the question, though, is it also true that they could never have discovered the means, the ability, that they were so far gone that they could never have freed themselves of their own if it wasn't for God? That is, the first answer seems to presuppose that, well, the Jews might have been able to get out of it on their own, but God would have kept them in slavery because it would have been the will of God. Or no, maybe that's precisely what we're saying, that the nature of the enslavement was such that it's only possible through God, because we get glimpses of that. They were too far gone to rebel in any kind of a meaningful way, as we do see when Moshe first came to them. All right, at first they heard, but then as soon as there was a setback, they sort of gave up. And they even turned against Moshe. When Paro initially made it harder for them, so they got angry at Moshe. So it seems to me that that's a very valid point. That, and now that we read how they manipulated them, and how they brought them down, I think that's something which is kind of permanent. That's destructive. When you destroy the human spirit, that's it. Person can't grow a new spirit. As long as the spirit is there, you can fight back. But once the spirit is destroyed, that's the end of that story. Very difficult, let's put it this way. It's very, very difficult. So what happened? But they did have enough energy for one thing. The next thing is Vanitzak al Rosham Elokei Avoseinu. That's very, very important. And it's interesting to note that this portion, which is really the declaration that the person makes, it's in Devarim, that the person who brings first fruits makes, he's talking about the Jewish nation and its history, but he's describing it as us, we. He's identifying himself with that. That's very, very important. Because that's the whole point. He sees himself as part of the nation, and the reason why he's in the land now is only because of the feast part of the nation, and this is the story of the nation. See, it's interesting. If an American was to talk about the Revolutionary War or the Civil War, he wouldn't say we. We fought the battle at Valley Forge and so on and so forth. And then we took the this Boston Tea Party. That was before, actually. And so you wouldn't talk that way, we. You don't identify with the Revolutionary War. That's the history of the United States, and now you're part of the United States. But I don't think it's the we thing. You don't have that thing. This is a very, very important turning point, because the Ramban makes a big point out of this, as we've seen. That he mentions this with regard to not afflicting the orphan and the widow, Kigerim Ha'isem, and the stranger, Kigerim Ha'isem, B'Eretz Mitzrayim, for you are strangers, and I will, that is, it's saying that I will hear their screams. If they scream to me, I will hear their screams. So according to the Ramban, this reflects that whole idea that people who are oppressed and afflicted, if they cry out to God, because they have nobody to protect them. So Hashem will protect them. Hashem will avenge their suffering. And this is the first expression. Vanitzak al Hashem al Kevoseinu. This is very important. The Jew gives you the sense that the Jews had turned away from God. And now they sort of return. Due to the situation, when it went well for them, when things were going well, apparently they didn't cry out to God. They lost their contact with God, which is the pattern. That's the way people are. But under the duress, when they lost all hope, it had to get very, very bad, and they lost all hope. They had nobody to protect them, except there was only one thing left, to return to Hashem. So they cried out to God, the God of our fathers. They recognized the God of our fathers. Vayishmar Hashem es kolenu. And God heard our voice. That's very, very important. That without that factor, if they had not turned to God, so then this wouldn't have happened. Vayar es anyenu. It's interesting. And he saw our affliction. But God sees everything. It's only when they called out to him, it creates the impression as though God wasn't aware of it, and we called out, and he kind of responded and looked. Of course, that's the Torah speaks in the language of man. That's not really true, because God knows. God knows everything. But it's being described that way, to tell you that if you don't pray to God, so he doesn't necessarily take notice of your situation, in the sense of doing something about it. So when it says he saw their affliction, it meant he paid attention to it. V'yes amoleinu, and our labor, v'yes lachatzeinu. Anyeinu we've already dealt with. L'man anoso b'sivlosam, that's the affliction. Amoleinu is the... Amala is like to be ma'amel. You're supposed to be ma'amel in learning. To toil laboriously. So that was the second thing. But then there's lachatzeinu. That's the third thing. The pressure. So, in accordance with the approach over here, this is the declaration that's made. Now, in the Agudah, we're going to darshan everything. So then it goes back. Now we're going to break it apart. Vanitzak al Hashem al Kevo Senu. That's the first phrase. Kemosh Enemar, as it says, Vayi Vayom Arab Mahem, and it wasn't those many days, Vayomas Melech Mitzrayim, and the king of Egypt died, Vayonchu Bnei Yisrael Min Havoda, and the Bnei Yisrael groaned from the labor, Vayizaku, and they screamed. Now there's a Akka. Vatal Shavasa Melholo Kim Min Havoda. And their prayer went up to God from the Avoda. There's different pshatim given for the juxtaposition of the death of the king and the groaning. One pshat is cited by the Rashbat that they thought they were waiting for him to die, for that new king, the new king who arose and enslaved them. So they were waiting for him to die. Means that they associated it with him. Sometimes you get a bad ruler, and he imposes afflictions and whatever, but then he's gone, and the situation goes back. Apparently, according to this, they didn't accept this as the permanent reality. They were able to. So it's also interesting. Why do I need to know this? Perhaps that's explaining that until that point they didn't cry out to God. See, is that which only reinforces the idea that they should have cried out to God. But as long as a person, there must be a certain reluctance, a certain resistance. As long as a person feels that he can deal with it, it'll go away, so he doesn't cry to God. As long as he feels it'll go away. That's sometimes pretty much denial. But once it didn't go away, the king died, and in fact, it got worse, it would seem. So then they were shattered. Then it all became, as long as you can go through tough times. If a person can go through tough times, as long as they have hope, and they don't believe that this is forever, so they can bear it. Even on a small level, you go to a doctor and he's going, this is going to hurt. How long will it hurt? So just knowing that it's going to be 5 seconds is different than if you don't know, and it just keeps going. So, because you can deal with it, you can brace yourself, and put up with a lot. Of course, there's a limit to what you can put up with, you're only human, but even so, whatever it is, the worst element is that it's never going to stop, it'll never end. So according to the Rashbats, they were able to deal with the pain, because they felt it was just this king, and maybe another king will arise, and he'll make it easier. I guess they comforted each other that way. Ukishero she'achar mos hamelech lo hukal me'aleihem, and when they saw that after the death of the king, it didn't get any lighter. V'im harisha and hekal achron hichbid, and to the contrary, Where the first king was, it was a little bit easier. The second king became even tougher, got worse. Az nen chuharbe, then they groaned a lot. Below matzu takana el lispalo elokev oseim loshiam, they had nothing to do. There was nothing they could do except pray to God. So basically, person doesn't pray to God until that's the only option left. But what do you learn from this? What is your reaction to that feeling that they had? The Torah is pointing out that this indeed, according to this Pshat, is how they function. What's your reaction to that? That is to say that they had a certain hope that things would get better, and then it was dashed. I'm not sure that it's a good thing. It all depends where. This can be a symptom of denial and fooling oneself. Indeed, if you study the Holocaust, the years leading up to the Holocaust, where there were many, many signs. Hitler was not exactly secretive about his intentions. He was pretty open about his anti-Semitism, but not just that, about his intention to really hurt the Jews badly. And then there were many decrees. He came to power in 1933, and right from the start, they started making special laws, this. Every time they did so, the Jews would rationalize, that's all right, that's it, this is as far as it's going to go, and after that, he's not going to go any further than that. And subsequently, when he made new laws, they rationalized. And okay, that may be okay, that gave them a certain hope, and you can continue living, but the danger was, since they were not expecting what actually took place, they didn't do enough to get out of there when there was still time to get out of there. You didn't have that desperation. There was always the element of denial. And that's a major element in the story of the Holocaust, not just in Germany, in the other countries. That's part of the story. Not to criticize people, but to the extent that the Jews went along and weren't cognizant of what they were headed for. According to this interpretation, that's what it's saying. That they had false hopes. Now, from one aspect, I guess it was good, because once those false hopes were dashed, so they were completely devastated, so they called out to Hashem. From that standpoint, it was good, but that doesn't mean to say that it's rational to act that way. I mean, you can't say, well, look, a person acts foolishly, gets himself into a terrible situation, so he really prays to God. So therefore, but that doesn't mean that's correct to live that way, just because at the end of the day, he had no choice except to return to God. In general, if someone is afflicting you, you're in a situation like that, one should be very cautious. One should not try to lighten it or deny it in any way. This is especially, when it's anti-Semitism, that's a danger. We've seen it now. There's no excuse for this generation to be involved in these kinds of thoughts and denials. Unfortunately, that's what's taking place in Israel today. It's impossible to grasp. After the Holocaust, you'd have thought this is the wisest people. And they still continue to deny and to refrain from really striking back and protecting their people. They have the mightiest army in the area. It's just an amazing thing. It shows you that psychological weakness is the ultimate danger. Weapons, armies, etc. are meaningless. That's the story of the democracies leading up to World War II. They all engage in denial. Then it says that their cry went up to God from the avoda, from the labor. Yeah, it would seem that the words minu avoda has a significance, because there are two possibilities when a person is in a desperate situation and cries out to God. It could be that the desperate situation was the motivator, but now he's a changed person. But it could be that it's just a situational phenomenon. That is to say that he's not a changed person, and if suddenly the threat, the danger, the labor would go away, he'd stop crying. It's a cry which is only from Avoda, limited just to that. Well, nevertheless, it said it went up before God. Then it says, Vayishmar Hashem es kolenu, and God heard our voices. You need Pesukim for this. How do you know what's going on? You can't make this up on your own when you're telling a historical story. Kama Shenemar, as it says, Vayishma Elokim es nakasam, and God heard their groans. So that's translated moaning. Is moaning the same thing as prayer? No, it means that it was prayer, but there's a different kind of a prayer. There's a prayer where, you know, you may be very bitter and so forth, but you summon your energies and you offer a prayer. But here, it was a crying kind of a prayer. It was praying and crying and moaning. That it was very emotional as well. It wasn't just saying the words, but it was despair. The despair, the pain was in the tefillah itself. Then it says, Vayishma Elokim es nakasam, God heard their moaning. Vayizkor Elokim es briso, and God remembered the covenant, as Avram es Yitzchak es Yaakov, with Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. The question is, why do you need both? If God heard their prayers. What do you mean he remembered his covenant? What does that have to do with the situation? The implication is that you needed both. Of course, the question is why you need both, but we'll see if we can explain it. That is two factors. There are two causes here in terms of the response. One is the covenant. If there was no covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, then might not have responded in the way that he did respond. The second one, however, is even if there is a casa, then the question is if there's a covenant, so what's the point of the prayers? It means you have to be on a certain level where you, even in spite of the covenant, doesn't mean that every group of Jews in any situation are going to merit. So it's because you, by turning to God, now you are in line with the covenant, with the objectives and the goals of the covenant. But the covenant was there all the time. Didn't protect them. It only comes into play when they turn to God. If they don't turn to God, then they're not part of the covenant. They disassociate themselves from the covenant. But once they associate themselves, they remember the God of their fathers, Isaac and Jacob, and they pray to that God. So now they put themselves in line. Now they relate to the covenant. So now it's saying that they cried out to Hashem, and God heard our prayers. Then it says, Vayaras Anyenu, he saw our affliction. Let's see what the connection is between all these different elements. But it's very, very interesting. What is the affliction? Now, when we first read the Pasuk, we thought the affliction was the building of the cities. Laman anoso besivlosam. The building of the cities. Here it's giving on the drash. In terms of drash, it's saying something else. Zu precious derech eretz. Well, everybody learns that shehefrishim min shoseim shlo l'shamesh. That they prevented them from having relations with their wives. Now, this, not that there was a special decree, it seems. It does not seem that there was a special decree that they couldn't have children, but rather, in and of itself, since the decree was that all the males should be killed, cast into the Nile, so that automatically put a stop to having relations or having children. For example, the Rid says, Einza oni hashibud. This is not a reference to the affliction of the shibud, of the labor. Because it says, V'yes lachatzenu. So, the term lachatzenu, the lachatz, apparently, is talking about the pressure from the work. Here, it's talking about the fact that they could not engage in relations with their wives. Why is it to Moshe Nemer, as it says, now he wants to prove that that's what it's referring to. See, here it's a lot of, this is drush. When we read the Pasuk, there's no way we would have known that this is a reference to that. So he's saying it's precious derech eretz. But what's the proof? K'moshe nemar, as it says, Vayar Elokim es b'nei Yisrael. God saw b'nei Yisrael, Vayeda Elokim, and God knew. Well, how does that prove anything? Well, first, what does that mean, and God knew? What did God know? All the commentaries are struggling with this. How does this Pasuk support the idea that the affliction is precious, is separation from man and wife? So the Avudraham says that God knew. It says that God saw B'nai Yisrael and God knew. It's a reference to something which is hidden, which only God would know. He says, She'ein achirim yodim bo, el HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'vad. This is something which only God knows. Vayeda Elokim. The Ritva also says that he deduces this point from the expression of Ayeda Elokim, which is Davar She'ein Yodu El HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the same idea. That it's something which only God would know. But he goes on. He has more to say. Ki Meirov Ha'inui. He says that he's adding something. He's saying that it doesn't mean that literally they stopped having relations altogether. That's part of it, but even those that did, because of the affliction, they couldn't do it properly, whatever, and they began to diminish in numbers. The numbers began to diminish. If you remember, of course, there was a period of time when they were increasing tremendously. So now they began to decrease. Okay. Then he says there are those who say that he derives it from the expression Vayeda Elokim. That Vayeda is an expression of knowing. The other thing is, that term is used in the Torah openly to indicate Vayeda Adam Odes Ishto. He knew his wife. So the knowing means that he knew her sexually. But here it's Vayeda Elokim. I don't know how that works. How could you assign such a meaning when it's referring to Hashem? He says, Ki HaTorah Shei Loshna Kodesh, because the Torah, which is the holy language, Mechana L'Tashmish, refers to Tashmish, to sexual relations, V'Loshon Das, with the expression of Das is not, is knowing. Why does the Torah use that euphemism of knowing? Okay, it doesn't want to say it directly, but knowing, what does that have to do with knowing? La'orei la'adam, to awaken a person, shelo yasa ha'maisa ahu la'ano ativis bilvad, that a person should not perform that action just for the instinctual gratification. Kibahemos, like animals, she'en lahum das, that do not have knowledge. But rather, that he should do this action with wisdom, with mind, to differentiate himself from the animals, who follow the principle of lust. But a man was given knowledge, and thus he should do it in accordance with his intelligence. So that's why it's saying it that way. Assuming that Vayeda, that he did this action with intelligence, with knowing. Lahashlim mitzvahs period of arivya, ulukim aguf, for the sake of procreation and for maintaining the body. It's a practical need that a person has apart from puruvu. So it's being suggested that we have to incorporate the drush into the text, the plain shot. The plain shot is the humiliation, the affliction. But now it's going into all of the ramifications. And one of the ramifications is that it affected every aspect of their lives. And it made them unable to continue as a nation, to reproduce. This midrash is telling you that there's a deeper element in the affliction. Now, if you put it all together, it does follow, because the basic idea is that when a person is afflicted, it has an impact upon him psychologically, so it diminishes. So the plain shot is that that was a result of the labors, that they dumped their labors upon them, these special taxes. But now it's giving all the ramifications, which means that there are other things in life that can compensate. So a person may feel a certain humiliation in one area, but then he takes comfort. His wife, his family, he has children, but that they couldn't do that either. So that's part of that's part of the inui, part of the degradation that occurred to the nation. That was the degradation. The Esa Molenu, which basically means our labors, Elu Habanim. This is the children. So this too, Amolenu now is being used to refer to their children. Because the Amel Ha'adam U'masa Yodav, that the struggle of a person is his children. That's what he's struggling for. So this is a reference to the fact that that God took note of the decree. K'moshe Ne'emar, as it says, Kol Habein HaYilod HaYoreh Tashlichu, that whatever, all the male children should be cast into the river. It says, that's pressure. But what are we talking about over here? What kind of pressure are we talking about? Yeah, the Shivli HaLeket, for example, says that Yesh Mefarshim, there are those who explain, Al Shem HaDochak, that it's a reference to the pressure. Shohayu Anoksim Dochkim Osam, that the taskmasters pressured them. Lahashlam Tochen Alveinim, to fulfill the quota of bricks. It's interesting, the Ritva says something else. that when the Egyptians saw that they couldn't destroy them, they began to pressure them to convert to their religion and assimilate with them. V'zeu she'nemar, and that's the meaning of Agamra Isias Alachatz. That's what Hashem said to Moshe, and also I've seen the pressure. Kizeh hosef ligolos amehera, because that was a factor in determining that they should be redeemed quickly. Meaning, he's translating what God said. Ki yari anoche, that God is saying that he's afraid, shema lo yuchlu lamod b'nisayon. Maybe they won't be able to withstand the test, the pressure. Ki kfar hischilu lesar v'hem ksas, because they've already begun to mingle with them. V'levat del bris mila, and to nullify the bris. V'alecha zachre hakochos al yonim v'kshafim, and to pursue the forms of magic and so on. See, there's two interpretations over here. One is the pressure of the labor to produce the bricks, even though they didn't have this, they had to go and get the straw. The other one was that there was a pressure to convert. Okay, so that concludes that part. So what do we derive from all this? What are we learning from this? What?
The difference between Hashem hearing the prayer and
seeing
all these things. Why do you need both? Okay, that's a good question. I learned that also. It's like in the Yishma Kolinu, it says that Hashem like remembers the peace that he has with the Avos. But then,
Yeah, why do we have to know this? I mean, isn't it enough that God heard our prayers, and that's it? What do I mean? He saw this. He saw, of course. Whenever God hears your prayer, let's say. Yeah.
So is that what it's saying, that it was cut short because of these factors?
I guess that's what you have to say. That's what it seems. It's telling you, yeah. So now, so what do we have? We have the story. I mean, the development, the fact they went down, the fact that the Egyptians targeted them and brought them down. It's going to the, you know, in a sense, they completely disintegrated. Were it not for Hashem, it's only because of the intervention of Hashem.
Not cry to God, and that is, it would be only this third part.
The implication is that they had nothing to say. There's nobody there to say. First, you have to pray.
But God might respond still just because he is the Rachum Bechanan.
Okay, so what's wrong with that? Okay. Oh, you mean what? No, you mean, but then that's even if you don't call out to him. I'm not saying it's impossible, but that's what we derive from this. The God is not making that point. God is making the point that they cried out to Hashem. Yeah? That's what he's saying.
It seems like it's also an idea like that once God intervened and that was triggered, then like God took care of everything. Although they just cried out because of the pain, you know, God took care of like everything, not just the reason that they cried out.
I'm not kidding. What? I didn't understand that. Did anyone understand? Did you get what she's saying? We didn't get it. Nobody got it here.
I'm saying it was like once God intervened, like God took care of everything that was like not just the reason that they cried out, but everything else that they needed, God provided for them once He intervened. It kind of reminded me like of the point that you made us think about 2 weeks ago. About like once God intervenes, and you know, with the you know, there's complete justice. So even if the person that afflicted the other person, he's also going to be met out with justice. So it's just like a complete.
But that's true. That's true. But that seems to be a different idea. I'm not sure that that's being expressed over here. What?
Yeah, nobody's saying that. Once it started out, it says, we cried out to Hashem, but then Hashem saw, and Yehenu Amaleinu Malchaseinu. So once He was answering, He took care of all the problems.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Oh, you mean because that's not a bad idea. Because they cried out, Min HaAvoda, just because of the Avoda. But God answered with regard to everything. That's pretty sharp. All right, we got it. We got a point. That's a good shot.
But may I ask one thing?
You see that obviously God is different than a human king. When you go to a human king and you have a petition, if you're fortunate and you get a hearing, so maybe he'll address himself to that particular. And even then, maybe not completely. As you would like it, partially. But you're not going to find once he takes up your case, and okay, so he looks at your whole situation and makes everything better. That you're not going to find. There's a difference between someone who just responds to a need or a request, as opposed to someone who genuinely turns his attention to helping you. When a person genuinely turns his attention to helping you, so then he does so, he looks over the whole situation. And he'll notice other things you may not even have been aware of. If you call someone to fix something, so 9 out of 10, they're just going to, you're lucky if they fix that particular thing. They may notice other things, but that's only because they want more money. But they're not going to notice anything when it's not in it for them. But someone who cares will look over everything and the wiring and make sure that you have a safe. They want you to be in a safe place. So you only call them because of one thing or two things. You may not have been aware, or you were, but you didn't want to bother them. But that's someone who is motivated to be compassionate to you, which is that's the trigger. So that's pretty much that's like the idea that's being portrayed over here. That until the Jews. As long as the Jews were steeped in their denial and they were cast away from Hashem, so there was Hester upon them. But once they turned to God, even though it was only Min HaAvoda, it was moaning from the labor, that's basically all they had on their mind, but God addressed everything in the situation. Once God turned to them, it's a complete restoration, so to speak.